Good morning. Today is Thursday, October the 11th. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County DA, or is it DA?
DA.
Okay. Maggie Fleming.
Good morning, Brian.
Do you like historical fiction?
I do.
Middle Ages?
No, more current.
Okay. I've been reading, there was a Camelot series, which is 9 books Jack White did, and now I'm reading the Kingsbury, which is Ken Follett. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. It's about a cathedral. Da being dad. I figured it, you know, with your heritage, couldn't trip you up on
exactly
that one.
That's exactly right. Da is dad.
Yeah. So that's not why we say that, though.
No.
Let's see. Okay. Blind pig. What is the origin of the name blind pig, often applied to a speakeasy?
Any clue?
I have none at all in this one. I'm totally lost. In order to get around the Massachusetts statute of 1838, limiting the sale of hard liquor, an enterprising citizen of that commonwealth advertised that a marvelous striped pig was on view within a booth for a small fee. Having paid the fee, which was equal to the price of a glass of rum, the spectator found within the booth a clay pig with painted stripes and a glass of rum standing nearby. Blind is used in this term to indicate something hidden or secret. I bet you run into that kind of creativity too periodically. Oh, boy.
You never know what's going to happen on this program.
No, yeah. Either that keeps people away or keeps them coming back. I don't know which.
Right.
It's kind of like, you know, moth and light.
Gotta wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, often. Keep having these weird busts, huh?
Yes.
I mean,
is
it surprising or disappointing to you the continuing level of drug and drug weird after, 10 months of legalization, 18 months of kind of anticipating?
No, I mean, I think we're going to have years of transition for people to move into the legal market. And for those who aren't going to be in the legal market to move away. But I thought you were talking about we had some heroin methamphetamine busts.
Well, we were going to merge into that one. We thought start easy and then...
That is a huge problem that we have to try to solve.
Related to a subset of...
Yes.
With the marijuana trade?
Yeah, and then just also, you know, other issues. I mean, I've always wondered why we sort of see trends with drugs. I mean, when I first started, cocaine was big. Then it sort of died off.
That's because we're older.
And then it was methamphetamine.
Wasn't coke the drug for yuppies? And we probably have to define what yuppies is for half of
it. No, we saw it throughout Contra Costa in all different.
Across the board?
Across the board.
Ah.
It was very big in Richmond and other
places. Up here it was kind of like the backdoor stuff for a lot of business folks.
Yeah, no.
Oh, interesting.
And now we actually saw some again recently, and it sort of surprised everybody because it had sort of fallen off, and primarily what we see here is methamphetamine and heroin.
Are those two linked at all, or is the experience similar? Why would somebody selling one have the other, or somebody buying one buy the other?
It's a combination of factors. I mean, it again is something that I saw in Contra Costa early on working the drug cases. It was there are going to be those people who are literally going to have everything you need. So, and then there are going to be some who only
the department store,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah, it was really it was interesting because they had quickly figured out you did not want to be the person selling and holding. So drug officers would talk about it because the street corners had drug dealers, but they never approached the car, they never held the drug, and they never had the money. So literally, they were named. There would be a runner, a banker, and the dealer. And it was
so everybody kind of had their own function.
That's right.
So to speak, specialization.
Right. So that when officers came in, you know, people could say, "I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have any drugs on me." And it was because that's who the banker was, and the runner never actually had anything when he went up to the car. He was just trying to find out, what are you looking for? And it was always either, you know, cocaine or methamphetamine or marijuana.
I guess maybe restaurant might be a better analogy, huh? You got the clerk at the cash register,
exactly.
You got the waiter, waitress, and then you got the guy in the back that's got the goodies.
Right. And all of this was on any street corner, you know.
So do we have that degree here, or do we have a more basic approach?
It's similar. Primarily, though, I think the biggest change came with cell phones, because now people can negotiate and do all sorts of things. And then once people realized we could get all that off their cell phones, they started, they're called burner phones. You know, you can buy those cheap phones, and the idea is you use them for a little while, and then you dispose them. And so it's like everything. The internet and phones have really changed how people conduct business.
Business just isn't quite the word I'd use. But that's okay. I think we all, I agree with the concept there. So as things have evolved and changed, how have those changes hit here? Do we see changes, or is it just cultural changes that happen as they happen, and the drug trade in right. Humboldt and Del Norte is the same as it is anywhere else?
That's exactly right. And what we see is law enforcement's constantly having to change how they do investigations to adapt to the changes that those people who are working crimes, you know, what are they using?
Has there been any development or any allowances for cell phones to be access points, or are they still seen as private property and need search
private
warrants?
Private property
and all that
search
kind of
warrants.
Stuff?
It's actually gotten tougher.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Through case law or
through
legislation?
Case law. And legislation, actually both. Because once cell phones no longer just became a means of making phone calls, but became basically handheld computers, they were treated as such.
And computers are treated as
right.
needing warrants.
Exactly.
Nice. Everybody's on the same side. Okay. Okay, the redneck showed up. We'll disappear. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with D.A., Maggie Fleming.
I'm still here.
Yeah, no, not D.A. Oh. How tough is jargon?
In our business?
Yeah.
Very tough. There's a constant change. It's interesting because where you really see people who really know what they're doing. We have a lot of law enforcement who specialize, you know, whether it be drugs or sex crimes or, you know, whatever it is, and they stay very much on it. I mean, that's one of those interesting issues that a lot of what you do in a jury trial is having the officer interpret the text messages or interpret what's been posted on Facebook to explain what those terms mean.
Is it subterfuge, or is it just that that segment of society is so fluid? And I was at the gas station yesterday afternoon filling up, and there was some gal in a Suburban listening to a thump, 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 you know, one of those. The gas station attendant knew exactly who the artist was, and I'll put that one in quotes. Okay, maybe the redneck didn't leave. And I couldn't follow the conversation. And they were both, you know, 20-somethings. No chance. I just kind of smiled and continued to watch the gas pump go in circles. And I thought, you know, for any industry, we all have our jargon, and it kind of evolves at what we see as normal pace. But if you're trying to monitor culture or others, you can get lost in the weeds pronto.
Right. So I think it's a little of both. I think it is, if you're in that world, you like the fact that you have your own jargon. And then the flip side is there is subterfuge involved in it. We see it a lot. Jail calls, you know, they start with these calls are being monitored and stuff. So we're telling people we're listening. And then the conversations they have you can tell they're they're working very hard not to be explicit, particularly with, you know, when they're trying to invite this person, whether it be their girlfriend or someone.
You know where to go and you know who to talk to.
And every now and then the other person isn't so involved that they get it, and they'll say, "Are you talking about the heroin?" You know, and then you hear, "No, yeah." So there is a certain amount of that cleverness of they'll never figure out what we're talking about if we never say the words.
What about with texting?
Same thing.
Texting is on the phone, so you need to go through the whole process. But
right.
With that, there's the shortcuts and stuff.
Yes.
Are those easy enough to follow, or do they get
generally
really narrow,
yes,
too?
You know, because we typically you see the same other terms or abbreviations being used to mean the same thing in that culture. So obviously, it's different for drugs than it is for gang members than it is for people involved in sex trafficking. But once you, like again, I say the law enforcement who really work hard at this expertise, once they key in on it, you see it over and over and over. And then after a year or two, it all changes again.
So it's kind of like cryptology? Is that trying to figure out, break codes?
Right. Yeah.
That would be either interesting or very frustrating. I'm not sure which. What about in the business sector where there's white collar crime? Do they tend to use terminology like some of the others do? Are they more blatant or more clear in their communications?
I think they're more clear. Perhaps, though, that's because a lot of the terms, even though they're specific to that business, are more well known within that business. You know, so if it's, you know, money or things, there's a certain amount of, we're all familiar with those terms.
So
I don't see it as much.
More mainstream term,
yes,
terms being,
yeah,
used rather,
yeah,
than some of the others. That's got to be interesting. Now, do you have to keep up with that stuff, or do you?
We
have,
do to no, be
I
able.
Maggie,
yes,
Daw.
Yeah.
Or
yes.
Does the staff do it and then just kind of interpret for you so you don't have to
keep
abreast of all these various areas?
So I still do the vast majority of the felony charging. I'm reviewing those files. So it is an understanding of that because they're submitting the reports. And sometimes they're saying it, but a lot of times they're submitting it, particularly when someone's in custody and we're working hard. Sort of to play beat the clock. I'm looking, you know, they'll just submit the text messages and I'm reviewing those to see what all we have.
Oh, so you don't get a glossary?
Over time you do, you know, you constantly hear it and see it. And
here's my report. Here's the glossary sheet for
right,
this.
Right.
Yeah. Now, do the judges and the jury?
That's part of the education process. Just like, you know, going back to that example when I was in Contra Costa and you'd have three people on a corner, you know, one was the banker, you know, law enforcement would explain that. That was part of the trial explanation to the judge. One of the more interesting things that we did was we had a series. Literally, Richmond Police was trying to, you know, clean up a number of the street corners. They'd gotten so many complaints from people who'd lived in the neighborhood for years. It was like, is this going to be allowed? And so we decided, since there were so many of them, to proceed with grand jurors. And so we brought in one grand jury who heard these cases just one after another. And literally by the third one, you could see their faces like, oh, yeah, we know about this. You know, and the first one was working really hard to explain it, show it.
A little shock and awe.
Yeah. And then it went very fast after that. Because it is, once you understand what's going on, it's really easy to spot it and say, got it. That guy who's standing over there with a ball cap, he's never ever going to have the drugs on him. He's always going to be the banker.
Do you have the opportunity during a court case to ask the jury, does everybody understand what Officer Smith just said?
So the court can invite jurors to ask questions, and we do that a lot. So there is that. But really, it's making sure, you know, that you've explained it.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, American Ag Credit, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Maggie, considering some of the different challenges that are out there, and you got case law that's going on, you got all these various things, and then we've got these positions called judges, and so many are not being appointed because of politicalness. And then when one does, you know, we saw what happened over the last couple of weeks. From your spot in the criminal justice process and system, is the appointment of judges at the federal level something that is a handicap? Is it a hindrance? Is it a challenge? Is it just kind of a something that's going on over there on the side and really doesn't impact you too much? What does that do to the criminal justice system, not having so many judgeships being filled?
So it's sort of a two-part problem. One is, the Ninth Circuit in California is who decides ultimately some of our cases. So there is that federal piece to it. But more specifically, we had empty seats waiting for our governor to appoint judges to our local bench, and that was a very, very significant delay. And that's hard. You know, you get visiting judges, many of whom are not familiar with the community, and local issues. And then you're also stuck with sort of their time frame. Sometimes they're only here for a week. Well, if your trial's going to go 6 days, they can't hear that. So there was a lot of delays that resulted from that. I don't think we're trying enough cases. I'd like to see us try more, and hopefully now that we have a full bench, we'll be able to do that. But, of course, part of our issue now is three of them just came from the public defender's office, so they have a lot of conflicts. And even if they specifically don't feel they have a conflict, there's always that concern of, well, their last case that we worked against them on, you know, was this. You know, this might be a similar issue. Is it going to be a fairly decided outcome? So there's always those concerns.
How long does it take for the conflicts to process through? 2 years, no issue?
No.
18 months?
It's,
forever?
It can be forever. So, you know, for those who worked in juvenile court, you know, those are kids that unfortunately not all of them mature and then say, I'm not going to ever be in the criminal justice system again.
So they can pop back in 40 years and still.
And we had a case in Contra Costa County. The judge who heard it was a prosecutor and had worked in the DA's office for a number of years before she was on the bench. It had been decades. And she had a trial. The man was convicted. She sentenced him. And then the appeal was she had prosecuted him literally like 20 years before. She had forgotten him. You know, you do thousands of cases as a prosecutor. You don't remember the names. And it was kind of an interesting issue because I'm sure everybody proceeding didn't think there was an issue. Nobody remembered that. So it's always a problem. And for victims, it's a serious problem because, you know, obviously parents of children who've been abused or, you know, worse, murdered, are very concerned as they're sitting there looking at the bench saying, wasn't he recently, you know, a defense attorney, is he going to be fair on this case? And that's a worry.
Isn't that part of the vetting process? I mean, why would somebody appoint, other than the stuff you hear about from the 30s and the 40s, where it was more of a good old boy than the proper vetting, doesn't all that stuff come out in doing the background checks and
well, the idea is that when someone takes that position, you hope that they're going to let go with their past views. It's just whether or not it really happens. And we've seen it happen. It's, you know, like I think of Judge Simons in Contra Costa County. He'd been a public defender for decades. He became a Muni court judge, far and away one of the best judges I ever had. He's now on the Court of Appeals. And he's written the book on the evidence code. He's written the book on, you know, preliminary hearings. He is phenomenal. So it can happen, and it does happen. It's just particularly in the first few years, there's that concern.
The transition.
Right. And then I did, you know, there were judges in, I can think of in Contra Costa who'd been criminal defense for years who it was very difficult to try a case in there because they felt their opinions were so hard and fast that you sort of had to work double time in order to get them to say, I'm going to let you get that piece of evidence in. Their first reaction was always, no, that's too incriminating. We're keeping it out. So it was tough.
Kind of like a baseball umpire. Maybe tough. May have a tight
right.
strike zone, may have a loose one, but you're looking for consistency.
Yeah, and you're worried about the home court disadvantage or advantage, depending on where you stand. So, yeah, no, I think that's true.
How come it takes so long to get the appointment? Is that something that the governor and his office, they do all this significant background and it just takes so long to reflect, contemplate, et cetera, or is it seen as a low priority issue and they just don't get around to it because hamstringing anybody is tough.
Right.
And there are recommendations that are made.
I don't know what causes the delay. I will say when you see the appointments, there's sometimes, you know, 30 of them at a time. And when you look it over, it'll be, you know, 8 to San Bernardino, 12 to L.A. So the idea is all of the benches have shortages during the retirements or, you know, people moving on to other jobs. And so you have then huge pockets that he's trying to fill. And it is a lengthy process. I mean, the application.
It should be.
And it should be. Yeah. Exactly.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, the process of selection of judges, what's the minimum standard? What do they have to be a lawyer?
10 years a lawyer.
Okay, in any area. I mean, do
right.
they have to?
Any area. That's right.
They
any
don't have
area.
To be in court. They could be somebody who's just processing
right.
exactly. civil cases or business.
Right. They could be doing trusts and wills their entire career, and then
really?
They go to judge's school and they.
Oh, there is a judge school.
Yes, and so they learn all about, you know, the various types of cases. But absolutely, you know, we've all had that experience where the first time a judge is in a courtroom doing a trial is as a judge. And I've had judges even say to me, some who have done, you know, civil for years, say to me now, how many peremptories are you going to get in this case? It always kind of cracks me up because they realize, wait a minute, you know, the rules are different for misdemeanors, for felonies, and for lifetop cases. And so it's, you know, obviously kind of like the judges who come from the criminal side. Now they're doing civil cases, and maybe they've never, ever handled
it's a
civil
ball
case.
Game,
yeah, exactly.
It?
So it's, you know, hopefully a very steep learning curve so that they can really be running when they need to run on these.
Steep as in compressed timeline, not,
yes.
boy, they got to learn a whole lot.
Both.
Now, how many cases will one judge in Humboldt County have that they're working at one time?
Oh, that depends on whether a criminal or civil, and civil includes family law. So the volume is very high here, sort of like we have, you know, thousands of criminal cases at any point in time. The judges can have a significant caseload.
So if I pick a judge, whoever's in courtroom number 3.
Right.
Today.
So today,
what do you think? 8 or 10 cases?
Oh no, much
20,
more than that.
100?
We might have 30 on the criminal calendar.
That will be seen that day.
That'll be seen that day.
Wow!
And then, you know, there can be preliminary hearings. I think for the judges, maybe it is easier in some respects to be in trial because that's your focus. And I know I've always appreciated one time I did a change of venue and I realized it was so much, I don't want to say easier, but because I just had to focus on that one case. Because when you're here and you're doing a trial, you still have a morning calendar. It's sentencings that are yours. So you're going to go down and do that. Then you're going to run back to your office, go do the trial for a couple hours. But meanwhile, you're still going to be getting calls from victims on your other cases. You're still going to have police officers calling you and saying, you know, can you take a look on that that warrant that we're working on that homicide we have? So it's still, you're still working, you know, 15, 20 other cases at the time you're in trial. And I imagine that could be the same for judges.
Do bigger counties have just bigger staffs and everybody's at the same workload level? Or do bigger counties have judges that specialize in this kind of case and prosecutors that have specialization opportunities so that you become efficient instead of having to be a jack of all trades?
So I don't know how bigger counties do it for judges, but in bigger offices for DAs, you specialize.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Enjoy a sunny day. Hey, all right. See everybody tomorrow.